How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy. And joining us today, we've got Katie Lumen, who is a therapist and speaker based in Marietta, Georgia. Welcome aboard the show, Katie.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Katie, you have a background dealing with basically individuals and families in crisis, helping untangle generational trauma, and big part of that is building self-compassion. One of the things that, you know, appealed to me when I was looking through the opportunity of speaking with you is a lot of that deals with and expresses itself through people's attachment styles, which is a really interesting aspect to look at because it relates to how we interact with each other and often are misunderstood.
Yes.
So, you know, in your experience, how does identifying and clarifying core values support people from shifting to from one form of insecure attachment style to something that's more secure? Because we all like to be secure.
Yeah, absolutely. We all want to feel that. I don't know if you're familiar at all with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but it's this triangle diagram. Yes. And the, you know, the very bottom layer is basically your physiological needs. And then right above that is like safety, like physical safety. And then it goes on up from there. So yeah, it can seem like a bit of a leap to go from talking about how we use core values and identifying those to help you transition towards a more secure attachment style. And I often land there after starting backwards with someone. So they may come to me and say, oh, I'm having trouble, you know, in this particular relationship that I'm in. And once we identify what some of those particulars are, a lot of times we will land at the person having a lack of sense of self, right? So like, what are my needs? What's important to me? And it's hard to create and maintain boundaries and express those things to a partner or in a friendship if you don't know what your values are, right? So starting there to kind of begin identifying, you know, what do you enjoy? What's important to you? What is meaningful? What gives your life a sense of purpose? And that's where I like to start with that.
Yeah, you know, it ties into something I often tell people as I'm explaining some of, you know, my own philosophy with people is I always explain I'm the only normal person on earth. Everybody is divergent from me. But you're also the only normal person on earth. I'm divergent from you. Mm-hmm. And in that context, all of our experiences shape our attachment styles.
Absolutely.
And our challenge is to build bridges with each other. What are some of the subtle ways that attachment style differences can be picked up upon by each other and used to guide more effective daily communication? Because that helps break down a lot of the barriers.
Yeah, I think most important, there has to be at least some level of established trust, because if I'm going to let you in on who I am or expose you to some of my deeper attachment wounds, I've got to be able to trust what you're going to do with that information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we do it knowingly. Other times it's just part of our being and how we enter into the world and interact with others. And we're not always so self-aware. But once a person has some level of self-awareness, you could say, hey, you know, I've always kind of worried about if people really like me for me, or do they like me for what I can do for them?
Right.
And in a relationship that at least has some level of trust, that other person would then be able to say, oh, well, I really appreciate you sharing that with me. And there can be discussion about, when do you notice that? And how can we help each other to form more trust and a stronger connection through vulnerability and shared experiences?
And so many of these attachment style issues are rooted in early childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed an ability to tie specific types of experiences to different attachment style challenges? Because we talk about, you know, apart from secure, which there's dismissive, anxious, fearful, and variance upon that. And do you notice that there are specific outcomes where most people who become anxious have the following type of experience early on?
Yeah, I would say it's a collection of experiences or a pattern of experiences over time. So, you know, somebody with an anxious attachment style, they may have had a history of just inconsistent caregiving, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes their caregiver was emotionally attuned to them and they felt dependable. And then there's other times where they were not, right?
Right.
And so if there's a regular inconsistency, then it puts you in this state of anxiousness of, I don't know what to expect. I don't know which version I'm going to get today.
Right.
And therefore, I don't know if I can really rely on you. And then, like with the avoidant attachment style, that usually comes out of a relationship with a caregiver where they are emotionally absent or perhaps overly critical of that person. And so it's like, okay, I'm the person who is supposed to be safe for me is not safe. So I'm going to withdraw. Right. I'm finding that withdrawing from the relationship is the safest option for me. And we carry that over into our other relationships and adults. And then also there's the reactive attachment. And so that can be a more extreme emotional neglect or very abusive situations.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, these are challenges which people continue to struggle with until they're able to come to terms with, usually it's a trauma or an abuse that happened early in their lives. And those are incredibly difficult to confront. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's many forms of therapy that allow people to address this. And one of the things we've tackled a lot in the show is also the use of psychedelics to help people break down those barriers. How does that fit in your view with regards to overcoming the challenges?
Yeah, I think so. Regardless of the treatment modality that I'm thinking of, my first response is always, we've got to treat the individual, right?
Right.
So as we talked about, everybody is different. Everybody's going to have different needs and different adjustments in their treatment. And so if following the directives of a therapist, and I love working with doctors and psychiatrists, so we can create this kind of multidisciplinary team to help our patients get the optimal benefit from treatment.
Yeah.
I think that the psychedelics can be very effective. I know some people who have used it and they report that it just helps with certain blockages in ways that other therapy modalities have not been able to help them.
Yeah. It tends to remove our own fear of confronting and allows a peaceful state, which is quite interesting, because a lot of times the confronting is a triggering moment because we are dealing with the reliving with the issues. And one of the interesting things that happens, which, you know, it doesn't matter if it's through that or through a different modality, is people start identifying their core values and resetting them. What tends to surprise people most during that process, do you find, of when they're resetting their values or identifying their cores?
One thing that comes to my mind first is I I'm remembering this one person that I saw, and they had a particularly difficult time in identifying their core values. And what we kept running into is that every time we thought they had identified a core value, it would turn out, digging a little bit deeper, that it was somebody else's value. Like, oh, these are the values that were imposed upon me by, you know, a caregiver or a family member. And so spending a long enough time there, sitting in it, kind of experimenting with it to recognize this actually is a value that I personally hold, rather than something that I've been told should be a value that belongs to me.
Yeah. And that's key, is because it's like peer pressure. You should believe this, you should follow. And the reality is sometimes that isn't us.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing awakening for somebody to recognize, no, I think of myself, I can think of myself differently.
Yeah. And in to tie it together with the attachment style, right? Someone who is working towards developing a secure attachment style, the thought that their values might differ from a loved one's can threaten that attachment, right? Internally, to say, oh, if this person or these people find out that I have a different value, then they may not love me anymore. They may not want to be around me. So they tie together a good bit.
Yeah. And that's a big challenge for people in the LGBTQ community, where their families may have espoused beliefs that are inconsistent with who they are.
Yeah.
That obviously comes up a lot.
Definitely. Definitely.
So, you know, and that ties into some of the somatic awareness and nervous system regulation, which is a real challenge for helping people learn to control and rewire it. How do you approach that?
This is also one of my favorite things to talk about. So, you know, when we think about our, again, our physiological needs and our body's survival instincts, right? Yep. And our fight or flight system, and the difference between knowing that a bear is chasing me in the woods and my body still believing that I'm in physical danger, when what really is happening is that I've got some social anxiety happening, right? And part of that journey comes back to the self-compassion, being able to first acknowledge what you're experiencing, because so many people want to get past things by ignoring them or shoving them aside. But to get over it, we have to go through it, right? We have to be able to sit in those feelings in a safe environment with a safe person and gradually walk through that until our nervous system recognizes, oh, the thing that I thought was happening isn't actually happening. That was then, this is now. I can begin to feel the difference between that experience and this experience. And I'm building new experiences that are reprogramming, creating new neural pathways to help me be equipped to move through life.
Yeah, it's very much the flight or fight instinct, right? And when we're triggered, we're reliving or dealing with, how do we get out of this pain? Because it is a pain, and it's one that we don't always comprehend because it's so deeply ingrained. And learning to fight back against it, to accept that it's not happening today, and that perhaps our response isn't appropriate for today anymore, where it was how we had to manage during the time of crisis, is hard.
Yes.
It's incredibly challenging because we are, everything inside of us tells us run.
Right.
And unfortunately, it becomes like the fear of the unknown, but it's not unknown. It's something that happened, which also comes into then people who get into that pattern sometimes struggle with like hyper-independence, where they believe it's the independence gives them that power over it, but it creates barriers to actually the support and the partnerships that really grow and develop true powerful independence, but it's not alone.
Right.
How do you help people overcome that fear?
Yeah. Well, recognizing and establishing clear differences between what I call like codependence, and then on the other end of that spectrum, I would call that extreme individuation counterdependent.
Right.
Or, you know, relying back on that avoidant attachment style. We are social creatures. Yep. We need community, right? So there is a healthy in-between that I refer to it as interdependence.
Yep.
And the, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how fearful someone is about this, the damage has been done through relationships.
Right.
And the healing also must be done through relationships. And sometimes that starts just with a therapist, right? Let me establish trust and safety with this one person in my life, and let that one person become a secure attachment for me and help me, you know, find my compass on what is healthy and true and safe for me, so that I can strengthen that muscle and then go out and apply it to my most important relationships or to new relationships.
Yeah, because relational vulnerability is one of the deepest ones, because
yes,
we're choosing to open ourselves up to somebody.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. Tired of social media censorship? Frustrated by restrictions on TV, billboards, and traditional radio? CannabisRadio.com is the only platform where you can connect directly with over 1 million dedicated listeners without the limitations. Advertise your product freely to high-value, educated decision makers. Launch your unrestricted campaign today. Email Brasco, BRASCO, at CannabisRadio.com.
And to trust them to take care of us. We're always going to be looking out for ourselves in some way, but we're also asking or inviting somebody else to help take care of us. And we're fighting against really usually what's early neglect or chaotic mm-hmm. parenting.
Yes.
And no parent wants to think of themselves as doing wrong.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's hard to address why did this happen, because often our parents won't accept why something was not right for you.
Yeah.
How do you bridge that conversation? Because that's a big part of healing.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, in the experiences that I had early in my clinical training, it was very much surrounded in a recovery setting, right? Addiction recovery.
Right.
And anyone who is familiar with a 12-step program, acceptance is a major piece of that recovery. In an ideal world, and sometimes it is attainable and achievable, you can go to someone and say, hey, you hurt me in this way. And if that person is in a healthy enough emotional place, they may be able to say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I didn't know. I didn't mean to. Like, let me make amends to you. Unfortunately, that's not always possible, right? Either because the other person is not in a healthy emotional state to be able or willing to take ownership, responsibility. They lack self-awareness. They've got their own trauma baggage that is unresolved. Mm-hmm. And then also sometimes, unfortunately, the person is no longer with us, right? So it's just not even an option. So coming to terms with the fact that you may never get someone to acknowledge, own, or validate your pain is a big step.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in that. But again, the very first step is the acknowledgement. We can't heal through something by ignoring it. I often use the analogy of, like, if you have a wound on your arm and you're like, oh, this really hurts, but I don't think it's that bad. I don't need stitches or an antibiotic. And you just slap a Band-Aid on it. If it's more serious than that, then we know that an infection could develop. And if we ignore the infection long enough, then, you know, we're looking at it compromising the rest of your health. So even though it's painful and we may not want to do the work to clean the wound and give it the attention that it needs, it's critical that we do that for ourselves and our other relationships.
It is, because when we don't allow that to heal, we actually create damage in the other relationships around us. And that gets into generational trauma where, without meaning to, we inflict that pain on our own kids often.
Right.
And no one wants to harm their kids.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So what are some really great boundary setting tips for people who are aware, struggling, and want to overcome so that they can, one, avoid doing the same damage, but secondly, to allow them to heal properly?
Yeah. So acknowledgement. So once they have some self-awareness of their own needs and their own values, and are ready and willing to acknowledge any and all feelings about that, then it sets you up to be able to accept other people's feelings about your boundaries and to be able to tolerate other people's feelings, right? So we are responsible for how we treat other people. We are not responsible for other people's feelings, right? I may not understand a feeling that you have, but that doesn't mean that you're not entitled to that feeling, right? All feelings are okay. It's all behaviors that are not okay.
Right.
And a lot of times people are fearful of setting a boundary because they're concerned about the other person's reaction. Oh, I don't want to upset them. I don't want to make them angry or hurt their feelings. I don't want to lose the relationship. But when you come to someone with kindness, respect, and a healthy level of vulnerability, then it sets you up to have the best chance at success. And also, boundaries, people sometimes, whether we like it or not, need a little bit of time to get used to a change. If there's been a status quo, and we're saying, okay, this is no longer okay with me, I need it to be different, that other person may need some time and space to grapple with that and accept it.
You know, and that what you were saying is a really interesting point, because a lot of people, you know, there's some people who have naturally, through their upbringing, are secure. And it doesn't mean they're 100% secure all the time. They always have certain tendencies under stress and the like myself would be more earned secure, where I definitely would have been what's referred to as disorganized early on. Mm-hmm. And through a lot of work, I've evolved and learned. But setting the boundaries and creating that space for myself isn't something that happens overnight.
Right.
It's not like flipping a switch. And it's continually a step in the process, and you're always evolving and working towards something. How long do you find it takes people to start and actually go through that?
You know, again, I think it's different for everyone. And it's dependent on the individual. It's dependent on the specific relationship. And it's also dependent on the amount of support the person has who is trying to implement and learn a new skill. Right. You know, one of the areas where I see people struggle with implementing boundaries the most is with the follow through, because I will have people come to me and say, well, I set a boundary and it didn't work, or they didn't listen to my boundary. And I have to gently remind them that a boundary is about what you will choose, not what someone else will choose. Right.
Yeah. Well, and it's like learning. At first you don't succeed. You try again and again. Yeah. Right.
Right. And at first, because it's new and uncomfortable, maybe you come off more harsh than you want to, because, you know, you're nervous or whatever. But like you said, that's part of the learning curve. And if that relationship is worth keeping, then that person is going to be willing to go on that learning curve with you, to go on that journey with you. But in the most simplistic example that I give, it's like with a little kid, I may set a boundary and say, okay, you may not do this for whatever reason, but they continue to do it. And I can't just stand there and continue to say, you may not do this. I have to physically get up, intervene, redirect, you know, ride their emotional roller coaster until there's a new pattern set. Right. And that takes energy for me. Right. Sure. And people, I think, will bump up against that and go, oh, this is too hard. It's too uncomfortable. I'll just go back to the way it was. It's not worth it.
Right.
That's a major struggle point for many people.
And, you know, one final question that I want to just wrap up because of time, but a lot of times we're not really aware, self-aware, to realize that we exhibit these behaviors. What are some triggers or some things that people can help people recognize, oh, this is something that maybe I want to look at?
Yeah. Can you give me a more specific example of what kind of behavior you're thinking of?
Well, you know, we react to others and we don't feel right. Right? We sometimes ask ourselves, why did I react this way? Why do I, when people speak to me in this following way, why is how I react not necessarily normal's the wrong word, but is it right? Yeah. What sort of things do you see commonly that then lead people to ask the questions, how do I embark on the right journey? How do I change this to feel better?
Yeah. So back to self-compassion.
Right.
When you notice something like that in yourself, something that causes you to want to take pause and go, was that okay? I don't know if that felt right or if I feel good about that. I'm not sure why this person elicits this response in me. Uh-huh. Self-compassion says, okay, let's look at this, and we're not going to judge it as good or bad or right or wrong. We're just going to peel back the layers, figure out what feelings come up for me. Is this triggering an old wound or, you know, a soft spot that I have? And if so, what are the, boundaries either with myself or with this person that I need to consider implementing, right? How do I get myself to slow down, use what I call some rational detachment to recognize whatever the interaction was, it's highly likely that it wasn't meant to be personal. And what do I do with that information?
Right. That makes sense. So, Katie, we are out of time for today, but people want to learn more about you, perhaps bring you in as a speaker or contact you to learn more. How do they reach you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. My website, katielumen.com. It's just my name spelled out. Also my email, therapy@katielumen.com. Those are both great ways to find me.
Great. And Lumen is L-U-M-A-N.
Correct. Yeah.
Wonderful. Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us on High and Healthy today, Katie.
Thanks for having me, Richard. It was a pleasure.
It was a great conversation, and thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Richard Zwicky, and we'll be back again with you soon.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With Abuzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.